Yes, and welcome once again to another podcast episode and show of the TJ McElroon Show. I am your host, of course, TJ McElroon, back with episode 2. Fresh on the success of episode 1 after Matt Miller. A lot of retweets, a lot of favorites, a lot of comments. It's good stuff. I'm glad that everybody had a good time listening to that first show with Matt. The stuff with Jameis Winston was my favorite part of it, just because of my frustration from writing back whenever I would do college football and being able to eloquently and put a lot of rational thought into articles I would write, only to have people to reply back that, no, you're stupid and your headline's wrong and everything you wrote is complete gibberish and just completely just disagreeing altogether when you're like, no, by data and facts and whatnot to back me up. So very glad to have Matt on that first episode. But we move forward to this week's show with my buddy, former, of course, whenever we wrote with Bleacher Report, he still does a lot of video work with them. Big Nasty, also the host of his own podcast over at Pod Nasty, does wrestling. He's a very, very great person to talk to, just not only on wrestling topics, which we do get into midway through the show, but he's a person just like me. We both enter into our 30s. Both love pop culture, and as you can tell in the beginning of the show, we enjoy late 90s, early 2000s hip-hop and rap. I wish we could have got into a back-and-forth with Eminem lyrics, or even Ludacris lyrics, or if you would have called me on my young jock knowledge, and we could have maybe recited more lines to Tipsy, but you know, it's a nice way to get into the beginning of the show. But this week's episode, race and wrestling. Hulk Hogan got into a bunch of stuff over some comments he made on a videotape that was being recorded without his knowledge. Got him a little hot water. He's the face of pro wrestling. If you're going to make a Mount Rushmore of the sport, he'll be one of the four faces on there with your Ric Flair, your Dusty Rhodes, and probably Bruno Sammartino. Or if you take Dusty off, maybe Stone Cold Steve Austin or maybe The Rock. I mean, that's six names right there, but I'm sure everybody has their own four they would put it on there. So we talk a lot about what Hogan got caught in for. Would this happen to someone else if they were caught in the same predicament of being just completely tossed aside, told never to come back again, for at least not, may not come back again, but for the time being? And what would happen if someone got caught on the active roster, say hypothetically a John Cena? What would that outcome be? Because he is the face of the company, much like Hogan is the face of what World Wrestling Entertainment is and what professional wrestling is as well. So give it a listen here. You can follow Big Nasty at This Is Nasty. Follow his work on Bleacher Report through the videos, the Pod Nasty, and also anything that goes on with the show as well through Place to Be Nation, through myself at my own personal Twitter at TJ McElroon, which you can click on the bottom of the link, and also at the bottom of the podcast. Also, one last thing before we get into the interview with Nasty himself. I guess you could say that. We recorded this before the untimely death of Hot Rod, Roddy Piper. So I wish we could have gotten into what he meant and his legacy on the professional wrestling business. And also, I mean, we talk race and wrestling. As much as great stuff that Roddy did, he was a subject of a couple very sketchy racial topics with WrestleMania 6. And we say this, I think, on the podcast, with him painting himself half black and half white for his match against Bad News Brown. And some of the times when he would, as he would say, speak jive out of the black side or only dance out of his black side. The 80s were a different time, I'll say that. Or there's a legendary story of when he was working in California and to get heat from the crowd as a bad guy, he would play La Cucaracha as the Mexican national theme on his bagpipes. So different time, different era, stuff you would never see now in today's very politically correct world that we all live in. But Roddy was a legend in the wrestling business, and he will be missed dearly for all his contributions and for all the work he did in the past to build it up to what it is. If it wasn't for Piper, WrestleMania 1 wouldn't have happened. Hulk Hogan wouldn't have been as popular as he was, and he'll be sorely missed. So for every great guy, you need a great villain, and Roddy Piper was that villain. So McNasty coming up here after the break, and thank you for listening. On the show this week, old friend of mine, I guess we could say that, dating back to, I think anything before 2010 is considered ancient now. I mean, I just turned 33 yesterday, so anything that was pre my 30s is ancient history to me. So, you know, we had Matt Miller on last week to talk Madden and Twitter trolls and everything he does at Bleacher Report. So I'm going to stay within the Bleacher Report family this week and go with my buddy, Big Nasty, the lone wrestling voice, I think, over there now, correct? Yeah, I think there's a couple people there, but you are, whenever you think of Bleacher Report and WWE, we think of Big Nasty. Tell me I'm wrong, because I don't think I am.
That sounds right to me, DJ, and I appreciate the compliment.
Well, not only that, but now you run the Podnasty podcast, and every time I see you tweet about it, post something on Facebook, you know, anytime the show comes up, and even whenever I go check on like a wrestling website like 401 Mania, you're interviewing the top people from the WWE and just wrestling in general. So let's lead off here. How, you know, what's your sales pitch to get these people in? Because you're hitting it out of the park every single week with this podcast.
Well, I just put in relations. I said, if you come on my podcast, your entire company are a bunch of bigots. And, you know, it's working a lot better these days than after what's happened. No, I've got a good relationship with some people in WWE. I cultivated those relations all about WrestleMania. So, you know, I just reach out to the right people, and they're able to help me out by getting people on whenever there's something to promote. Because the thing about WWE is that they're such a promotional giant. They're always promoting stuff, and mm-hmm. So they'll email me and reach out to me like, hey, we got something that, you know, for pay-per-view coming up. We've got a book that's coming up, and they'd like to come on and speak with you. And once we're able to do that, you know, promote whatever they need to promote, we also, you know, get down to the real topics. I like asking questions that I think the fans would want to know. I like asking questions I would want to know. I single-handedly continued the Seth Rollins versus John Morrison beef. So if they ever have a match, I deserve a promoter's credit because I got Seth Rollins to talk trash about John Morrison, and that's turned into a thing now, TJ. So, you know, you're welcome.
If they do happen to face off, can you somehow skew it so it's a parking lot brawl or something to where it's outside the ring so we can see a parkour off?
Yeah, for the parking lot brawl, I think Morrison would have the advantage. I think Seth Rollins would much rather it be in a gym where they could, you know, do like a CrossFit Games type thing. So, you know, maybe they could do like a biathlon. So instead of a 2 out of 3 falls, we have a CrossFit Games challenge, we have a parkour challenge, and then the third fall first death match, cage match, and maybe the best man win.
I think that's a great idea. I really do. And let's hope that something happens with the Lucha Underground deal with Morrison, and he happens to come back. Let's see what happens. And even we'll throw in a little J&J security callback as well. And maybe Mercury, you know, turns on Rollins and reforms Eminem. Maybe. Who knows? I think that would be a nice angle on that one.
Hey, I like this. I really do like this. I think this angle has a lot of legs because they do have very similar styles. If you look at them, they look similar. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so I think a match between them would be a lot of fun. I think that's what's gotten a lot of people fired up about their beef is that you're thinking of Morrison, which is robust. It'll be like something you see at Circus the Lake.
Yeah. I mean, with as much as talented as those two are and the type of moves they could easily do, yes, you would see. It seems like you just need to put some people in clown makeup and you'd have a match. I petered out in that joke. I really did. I had something going there and I just completely lost steam. So I apologize for not following through for that one.
It's got a lot of promise. Just keep working it out. It's got a lot of promise. It's a great
fight. It was going somewhere, and it just completely just lost steam from there. So, but with the one thing that I noticed, though, with these guests that you got is you got Kevin Owens before he became, you know, Kevin Owens, the person that is highly in demand. So I missed the interview, but did you ask him if about his zoo enthusiasm?
About his, I'm sorry, about his what?
About his love for zoo animals, and about his love for just, anytime he's at somewhere, he has to find where the nearest zoo is, because he looked, I think he would find it more interesting going to a zoo than maybe headlining a major pay-per-view.
Yeah, I mean, we did not get into talk about zoo animals. maybe that could be an angle for next time, because, you know, I'm looking forward to having him on the show again.
If you do,
we mostly talked about Kevin Owens and his family, and we talked some John Cena, and, you know, coming up in NXT and stuff like that. He had a lot of interesting things to say, and one of the more interesting things that he had to say was, you know, he named the most underrated star in NXT, who he said was Gavin Spears, who is also Ty Dillinger.
Right.
And that's like the definition of underrated, because we don't think about him when we think of NXT, but he actually, you know, ever since he said that, I've watched Ty Dillinger. He is a very good worker. He's good hand. Not much of a personality, but apparently he's been doing something on the road that, like, he's been giving every match like a perfect 10, or he's been giving it a grade, and it's really getting over. So I really hope the best for Ty Dillinger. But, yeah, Kevin Owens is great having him on there and having him open up about stuff like that.
Well, I think it's the part Canadian side, too. I think that also played into him giving the rub to Dillinger. I think that might have been it. But, yeah, next time you have him on, he's a giant zoo enthusiast. So, I mean, you could talk to him about panda bears for 30 minutes. I think he would like that as much as about talking about wrestling.
Okay, I would absolutely. We're going to have an entire podcast on bears and zoo animals the next time I talk to Kevin Owens, now that you told me this.
And hopefully he just loves it. He just loves it and, you know, goes from there. But, the reason we came on today is, well, first off, Big Nasty, phenomenal person to talk to. We have a bunch of fun from there. And I actually was brushing up on my ludicrous 2000 rap songs and rap lyrics, because it seems like every time someone comes on your show, they have to give up 16 bars like Jimmy Correas. I did with E-40 and Southern Hospitality. It came on my Spotify playlist, and I was able just to completely go word for word ludicrous. I don't know how my 2000 memory bank kicked in like that. It was the first time I heard that song in probably 4 or 5 years. But is there a song that you'll hear on Spotify or Pandora or wherever, and you haven't heard in, you know, years, that you're so able to call back and know exactly every word from it, word for word?
I'm a huge Eminem guy, so, you know, The Real from Shady. I can rap. I've memorized more Eminem songs than I'm, I'm proud to admit, because a lot of them are just really messed up and misogynistic. But, you know, I probably know every Eminem song. I love the Dr. Dre. You know, The Chronic, when that came out, that was huge for me. Wu-Tang Clan, of course. You've gotta respect the sportsman, Wu-Tang Clan. Those are a huge influence when it comes to mixing into music.
Right.
And, there's a lot of stuff, you know, from that 2000 era. When I grew up, that was when, like, the DMX and, you know, Lil Wayne was starting to come into fruition and all those guys. So I know a lot of that stuff.
I tell this story, I swear, every time Tupac comes on. I was actually at a wedding recently where the bride and groom, they had their bridal party, walked down to a string quartet playing California Love. I kid you not, it was phenomenal. And to the point where I'm in the crowd, I see my buddy Adam, who was getting married at the time, to a, you know, our wonderful woman, Courtney. Great wedding, phenomenal place. But I threw up the West Side to him, and he threw it back at me. And I'm like, I'm so glad he saw this and did this. It's made my whole entire weekend. But it's amazing that it transcends to the point where my mom was doing cleaning when I lived in Pittsburgh, and I was probably 17, 18 years old, and Hit 'Em Up comes playing from my CD player upstairs in my bedroom. And, you know, F your bitches, that's why F your, you fat mother bleeper, you know, get money. And I'm like, what the hell is going on up there? And Kathy, my mom, goes, no. I'm sorry. Where's California Love? Put that on. I want that song to be playing. So it transcends to white mothers in suburbia. And my mom's favorite song to this date, I swear, is Young Jock. Yeah, Young Jock, It's Going Down. She loves that song. Anytime it comes on, she is in the club, It's Going Down. Meet Me Anywhere, it's better be It's Going Down. She will just love that song every time. But, or 2014, her song of the year, Turned Down for What? I don't know why it was. Love that song. she just phenomenal from it. Yeah, no question. Just want to give you that little thing from there. Just it's amazing how they it can transcend for that. Or
it does. It transcends more and more. You know how mainstream hip hop is these days? Trap music is mainstream.
Right.
Trap music is like, well, they're rapping about drugs. Not only selling drugs, but doing it in like the gutter parts of like the South and inside trap houses and have to have all these locks on them. That is, there's nothing mainstream about that, but hip hop has managed to make that cool.
I know.
You know?
I mean, you see, I think it was Kate Hudson had an Instagram video of her and her 11-year-old son dancing the Trap Queen. Or the KC Royals. That's all they play is Trap Queen. How'd it get so big?
I love seeing people sing that. You know, they have no idea what a Trap Queen is. They have no idea what the trap is. And if they would not sing the Trap Queen.
Or whenever Little John was big and Skeet Skeet was everywhere and people are like, yeah, good song. You're like, ooh, if you only knew...
Exactly.
Yeah. So, okay. One big thing from this week was what came out with Hulk Hogan and everything that he stepped into. Your last video that you put up on YouTube is that Hulk Hogan will be back. I fully agree with you. It's much like Wu-Tang has said, it's the cream method. If Hogan can make Vince money, he'll be back, and what else, you know, will play into that, that will eventually... Now, with Hogan coming back, will WrestleMania 32 be enough time for him to come back, or will this be something maybe 3 to 5 years down the road?
Yeah, I would say on the side of, like, 3 to 5 years down the road, but, I mean, he'll be back. As long as he stays alive, as long as his health is good... Not only will people be open to him because of his age icon, because this is so that he would need to go on an apology tour and right. Just apologize profusely and even like partner up with the NAACP or something like that and just show that he's a rehabilitated human being, because we've seen this with the Michael Vicks and we've seen this with people, not only in the realm of making racial comments, but when people rehabilitate themselves and right. Publicly show remorse, it can work in their favor. And Hulk Hogan will work in his favor because he picked the right industry to be racist.
Oh, of course.
And it has nothing to do with WWE's on-screen content. I mean, all these pro wrestling pundits, fans are all saying, well, WWE has a bunch of racist angles and, like, Triple H is being racist one time on TV. Forget about all that. WWE can defend that by saying it's TV.
Right.
It's an act. Look behind the scenes, okay? No black board members, no black corporate executives. No, Justin LeBron the other day told me there is one black writer in NXT. So, you know, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt on that. You know, but there's really no, you know, they've never had a black WWE champion, and you're right now talking to the only black, even outside of the WWE, you're talking to the only black artist in all those drillings, but maybe she didn't know it, you know?
Right.
So, there's really no black voice in wrestling, so of course stuff like this is going to happen.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's... I like they can say, well, we have The Rock. He's half black. It's like, well, that's not good enough, you know? And it's not even that where if they would make up, like you had a black rebuttal as a trending topic. If they would try to have a black rebuttal, there's no one that's really pushed up to a level to where they could put into a mainstream light, right? You couldn't see Titus O'Neil challenging Rollins for the heavyweight title right now.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. Usually, when WWE gets itself in these situations, they do respond by giving temporary pushes to black superstars. But they really have not addressed this topic on TV at all, which I'm kind of surprised. And you know, it's probably better that way because it's patronizing for them to just give a black person a push until everything rolls over and then everything goes back to normal.
Right.
If there's a black WWE, I want to be organic. I want to be because that guy's real hot. We need to do something with him. But unfortunately, I don't think we're ever going to get a real black WWE champion until there's a scandal. Hmm. And I'm talking like McMahon gets caught saying stuff like this.
Oh. You mean...
Elected out of the WWE, and in order to respond, Titus O'Neil is your new champion for a month. That's the only situation I could see WWE crowning a black WWE.
You mean aside from him on screen saying the N-word to John Cena, aside from that.
Right, and you know, I have to admit, this is this is more of a problem that reflects on WWE's behind-the-scenes culture than on camera. Like, people are complaining about these on-camera angles. Well, if you have, like, at least a couple of black guys in a writer's meeting to say, hey, man, I don't think you should do that. WWE would be a lot, you know, more diverse and less of a racially insensitive place. You know, so you need to make these changes in terms of authority things behind the scenes.
Yeah, so let's say this. It's easy to throw Hogan away because, I mean, his main on-screen role was Tough Enough. And it's a big enough name to where immediately removing him from the product makes a lot of noise. You know, say something of a lesser extent, Pat Patterson. First name that comes to my head, not saying any, you know, thing he's caught up. Or actually someone that did get caught out for this, Michael Hayes. You throw him to the side, it's not that big of a deal because, I mean, it's Michael Hayes, he was popular back in the 70s, blah, blah, blah. Now, let's say in some hypothetical way, Cena gets caught with a big racial storm around him. Is it so easy to throw him to the side, or is he, you know, kind of hushed under the rug for 6 months and does a bunch of other stuff while his image gets, you know, rebranded?
Yeah, it's very easy. Oh, WWE would have no choice but to get rid of Cena if something like that happened. But again, he would be back. You know, don't get it twisted. WWE does not have a zero tolerance policy for racism. Okay? We see way too much behind the scenes and on camera to believe that.
Right.
The fact of the matter is WWE has a zero tolerance policy for public scandal. That's why Michael Pierre Payne still works there. Even though he made comments towards Mark Henry that I think are worse than what Michael said.
Oh, yes.
I told you to turn around and say, hey, I'm a racist, blah, blah. Michael Hayes took that ugly, visceral route when he implied that Mark Henry just wasn't black enough, or in his words, I'm more of an N-word than you are, which is a horrible thing to say. It's a terrible implication, but guess what? Michael Hayes is one of the highest-ranking writers in WWE, and it's like it didn't happen.
Yeah, yeah. Or I saw Fusion. They had their posts about racism in WWE, and the main picture was Michael Hayes from the WCCW days with the Confederate flag painted on his face. Yes, to get heat at the time, but also hugely offensive. And I mean, I can only imagine if a higher ranking official would go up to Mark Henry and say that. I mean, I don't think there was any suspensions or any reprimanding for Hayes, unless I'm missing something, right?
Well, there was no—he did get suspended for 2 months.
Okay.
And I believe he lost stock options. But, I mean, right now, as it stands, they brought him back, and he is one of the most influential writers in that company.
And what happened to the social media manager that was hurling some insults to Del Rio? I think he eventually quit, but there was no reprimanding for him, was there?
Right, exactly. That guy did not lead to a public scandal. They kept him around after he made terrible racist comments to Del Rio, but it didn't bring WWE any national
right.
So, if, you know, just, that's not zero tolerance for racism. That's what they'll say when they get recorded. Oh, WWE has zero tolerance for racism. You know that's not true. You know what I mean? Right. I don't watch enough wrestling to know that's not true.
Right. Yeah, of course. I mean, I think the most famous one is two, actually. Piper being half black, half white before WrestleMania 6. That sure as hell wouldn't fly in today's world. Or the Nation skit that everyone widely praises. Let's see, Triple H was black-faced. X-Pac sure as heck was. And Billy Gunn was as well. I can't remember if he, you know, put some extra toner on his face during that the DX Nation skit.
Well, isn't that crazy? How does that fly on the radar? And it continues to.
Yeah.
And he continues to celebrate that bit. It's like one of the funniest segments of all time. But like, I watched it back the other day on the WWE Network, and I'm like, oh my God, this is so racist.
Yes.
And again, it goes back to the point. It's a large room that does not have any black people in it, so that when they move forward and they snowball with an ideal, and then we'll put them on in blackface. There's really nobody to get out of it.
No.
So they just put that on television without saying that through a black voice or even a diverse voice.
Well, let me ask you this. If there was a black voice in the writer's room, does New Day get booked a lot differently than how they were perceived from the start?
I think there's a lot less, like, checking and diving. Because, really, I get appropriating black culture, okay? Black culture is cool. Hip-hop is cool. I have no problem with black people dancing and rapping and stuff, but there's a limit. And it bothers me that every black character has to have a dance, they have to have a rap and a song, and they have to smile and touch his eyes. Why can't there just be a badass? Like Shelton Benjamin. For a while, Shelton Benjamin was just a badass who wrestled. And that was. I mean, he beat Triple H and it was going well. They need more characters like that. Or, like, there'll be nothing wrong with a black guy doing, like, the Bo Dallas gimmick that has nothing to do with their skin color.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that I just feel like every black character on TV is how a 70-year-old Vince McMahon views black people. Like, Vince McMahon could be in a meeting with a financial advisor, and the guy could be talking to him about long-term investment and diversifying his assets, and all Vince McMahon would hear in his head is, "What's up? What's up?"
I know, it's exactly, you're just thinking of R-Truth right there. I mean, the only time R-Truth had a good run was when he was teamed up with The Miz, and they headlined one of the four major pay-per-views against Cena and the Rock. And from that time, I don't remember him rapping to the ring or running around looking at spiders or, you know, fake children. I think he was a serious contender. And the only black superstars I can think of that had that serious moniker are Bobby Lashley when he had his run with Trump, and Ahmed Johnson.
Mark Henry in there. When Mark Henry does that Hall of Fame,
Mark Henry, yes.
People believe it. He was world champion on SmackDown and the ratings just went up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a great character. And that's something that, you remember when he had that angle with Cena when he cried?
Oh, yes. Yeah, when he gave his retirement speech.
I was so surprised. They could have pulled the trigger with him as a WWE champion for a short term period. Because he was surging at that point. But, I mean, still, that was like the this is probably never going to happen in my lifetime. Like, if Mark Henry on this incredible run, he delivered the greatest performance from the standpoint of acting that I've ever seen in professional wrestling. And after all that, he couldn't get booked as a WWE champion and beaten John Cena, so John Cena could lose for, like, the 14th time in the WWE title.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's weird that for some reason, I mean, I think I saw something earlier a couple weeks ago where it was Roman and Big E were neck and neck on who was getting the big push. You know, Big E had that run as the Intercontinental Champion, was feuding with Ziggler, and AJ had their little love triangle thing going on. And for some reason, they de-pushed Big E, and they pushed Roman to be the, you know, the golden boy, Prince Charming, saying nursery rhymes during promos. You know, does that go back to, in your mind, does that go back to not having the voice in the writer's room?
Yeah, again, and that's more of an institutional problem in that I heard that, like, Vince took more of a hands-on approach, but Vince is, like, he's getting older, and he's a genius, great at booking professional wrestling, but when it comes to, like, connecting with a younger generation, that's where WWE struggles at times, because everything goes through Vince McMahon. So, a band doesn't know what a trap way is. You know what I mean? They're not enough big luck. So, things like that are probably going to get nicked in favor of suffering succotash, which was really cool when Vince was like 13.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's not like there isn't the talent out there to carry the ball. I mean, does it kind of make you fear when UHA Nation makes his run through NXT and then gets that eventual call-up that he'll lose his steam of the independent cred that he has?
Yeah, and UHA Nation is just so talented, and I can't wait to see him. And he's another one who, if he doesn't go all the way or at least get a look at the WWE champion, you know, it might be a lost cause. I just fear when it comes to Ulan Nation, it'll be too easy to book him like Neville. He's very similar to Neville. They're pretty much the same. But a lot of people aren't going to make the comparison to other black wrestlers. Don't believe that. Ulan Nation is just like Neville. The way he works, a lot of his moves are used by Neville today. So, you know, I just fear that they're going to book him as that underdog who's shorter, who could win the match, but gave a lot of effort.
Right. That's, I mean, it is sad. But is there anyone, I'm trying to think of the wrestling landscape right now that could come through and break the mold and force, you know.
Jason Jordan.
Who?
Remember the name, exactly. Remember Jason Jordan.
Okay.
I've had my eye on him for a while. I could tell the way they talk about him in NXT, he's like a blue chipper.
Right.
Kind of reminds me of how they used to treat The Rock.
Hmm.
Right now, he's kind of vanilla. Doesn't really have a character. They paired him with this guy, Gabe, with a lot of personality.
Oh, yeah. The tag team. Oh God.
Yes.
I know. I can see him right now. I remember the backstage vignettes they had. Well, not vignettes, but the skits they did.
I could see Jason. I don't know what his lineage is. I don't know if he's full black or half black or whatnot.
Right.
But you know, he's got the look. He's got everything except like that personality. He really needs a little more. But that, I think he could develop that because you can tell it's there.
Right.
So he just needs to get better on the mic. And once he does, I think he will be a real contender because he's just got the athletic. He's got everything. I've seen him. You can tell they've got something invested. You know, he's really protected. So I really do see him being a big deal.
Was he a part of the stable that kind of fizzled out in Shoot Nation, where everyone who was a collegiate wrestler before they came there kind of banded together?
Yeah, I believe he was.
Okay. So maybe he
was a collegiate wrestler, yeah.
Maybe he gets booked as Black Brock Lesnar.
He could be like, he's not that big.
Okay.
To be like a Brock Lesnar type, but you never know.
Right. So he's got the mold and the talent as a Lashley, but he has more personality is what you're saying.
I do think he has more personality, especially than Lashley. And you can actually see it. That's how good Gabe is. I don't know if Gabe's last name, I'm sorry, it's Jason, but his tag team partner is really bringing out that personality. If you watch NXT from week to week to week, Jason Jordan and him play very well off of each other.
Nice. Yeah, because I just remember he gave him the little rally towel like freaking Ricky Ortiz. He threw it on the ground and did his little back to his workout. But I hope you're right. I really do hope you're right. Let me ask you this here before we go. Does TNA do a better job of booking black wrestlers than WWE? Because the BDC was a phenomenal group. I would always stop on when I would go through the DVR on what King and Low-Key and MVP and would do. And even whenever they had their beef with Lashley, it drew me in. So, I wonder what they're doing differently, aside from taking it more seriously.
You know what they're doing differently? Is that, you know, MVP and the wrestlers have a lot more creative control and freedom in TNA to book their characters. So what's great about the BDC when Lashley and Kenny King and MVP were together, it was not a race thing.
Right.
Everybody wanted to call him MLK, and everybody wanted to, like, tie them to race. And MVP even said in an interview, he said, no, we're just three guys who like hanging out with each other.
Right.
There's no stereotypes. There's nothing. There were three badass dudes like taking up and sleeping. They're you know, and that's the type of thing that like black people don't always feel the need to cater to the lowest common denominator stereotype and whatnot. Sometimes you're just a bunch of dudes just like hanging out,
right?
And you don't have to be this over the top stereotype where they're going to do all this stuff that appeals to the lowest common denominator,
right?
And that's what the BDC was, and that's what was good about them.
Right, and it worked. I mean, I love their gimmick. They were a lot better than The Rising, you know. It made sense that they went over, and it was a shame that terrible TNA management made that group just pretty much fizzle out because they can't do one single phone call to fact check to make sure someone's out of a contract when they're not out of a contract.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, here's the difference between the New Day and BDC. Like, BDC is like me going over to like my uncle's house. And he doesn't accommodate any, he's just my black uncle. We just hang out.
Right.
Talk, we talk, how's your aunt doing? How's everything going? Good. There's nothing that has to be adjusted. The new day is like me carpooling with a white guy, and the white guy goes, okay, so I got a lot of hip-hop here that you want to listen to. I'm a, do you like Fetty Wap? Or, you know, they're trying to over-cater to me.
Right.
It's like, dude, I just want to, okay, whatever you've got is fine.
Right. Like, hey, here's Ja Rule. Do you like Holler Holler? I like Holler Holler. Let's play that.
DMX?
Yeah. Yeah. What about Cisco? He's cool, right? Or Drake? I like Drake. Yeah. So, do you think it's because the New Day, they WWE, it's more kid-friendly. It's more PG. Like, they force their guys to be over the top.
Yes, and that's, that's another thing that I have argued in favor of. In terms of character development, WWE likes having those personalities that connect with people. And I understand why. It doesn't enough have to beat you over the head, though.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the top stars in WWE right now. And this is a disconnect between WWE and Tough Enough. The narrative of Tough Enough is that you have to be this character.
Right.
Which is BS.
Right.
What was so ironic to me was that Seth Rollins was on one of the episodes, and his thing was, I'm going to teach you guys how to be a character. Why?
Right.
You're not a character on TV. You're just Kobe Lopez with the volume turned up.
Right.
You know, Brock Lesnar, the most over babyface, that's his real name.
Right.
He's really a beast. He's really an animal. Same with John Cena. You know, there's so many guys who now are not characters as much as they're themselves. And they're finding what makes them different.
Mm-hmm.
You know who the characters are in WWE? Fandango, R-Truth, Barrett. Where are they in the card?
Yeah. Matadors.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at primetime players. They got a name, but Titus and Darren, they seem like that's their real selves.
Exactly.
And they're the tag team champions. Or, you see John Cena on Total Divas. It seems like normal John Cena, just I'm not screaming catchphrases and demanding title shots every single time I step into a ring.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I met with Cena a couple years ago doing a piece here in Austin. And I found it funny that he was still in his, cargo shorts and whatever T-shirt he was shilling at the time. And I'm thinking, do you just always hang out like this? But it's just, it's normal clothes. I mean, it's a T-shirt and shorts. I'm in a T-shirt and shorts right now. So it was interesting, but yet you kind of saw what it was. But you're exactly right. And I saw that. Now, let me ask you this. Hogan no longer on Tough Enough, as we know. And Mata gets eliminated this past week. Coincidence?
Yeah, because Mata was like Hogan's favorite
it
guy.
It was.
Because Mata kind of reminded you of that A's wrestling archetype of the guy who's screaming and all that stuff.
The Sultan or the Arabian Prince or whatever he would have came out as.
Exactly. And I don't think it's that much of a... So maybe having Hogan on the show talking up how great Mata was discouraged the other hosts or the other judges from nominating him.
Right.
But now that Hogan is gone, I think that's more of an inside job that they got rid of Mata now.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no link to Hogan any way whatsoever.
Yep. Once I saw that elimination happen, I'm thinking, this is kind of fishy. You know, it's kind of interesting that all of a sudden he's gone the same week that Hogan's gone. Like, what? I mean, you can connect the dots, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Hogan, love that guy.
Right. Yep. Talk him up every single week. Every single week. So, okay. We're at 3 minute mark. Pod Nasty, going great. Bleacher Report video, always going great. What else are we working on? I mean, the WWE mailbag, I always try to throw things at you, like Scott Steiner, Suplex City, their originator of Suplex City.
I like that. I also like a lot of your Black Rebuttal tweets. Those are very, very funny, TJ.
It's true. I mean, Teddy Long gets to make more than just a tag team match. Ron Simmons gets to say more than one word. You know, those are things where you're like, oh, yeah. Or Teddy Atlas comes out as the real All-American to Hulk Hogan's old theme. Like,
I would love that.
Right, exactly. Or Kamala gets to actually talk instead of just grunt.
Well, let's not get carried away here.
Okay, gotcha. So, all right.
Well, I got your Pod Nasty going on. Follow me on Twitter @ThisIsNasty. Watch the videos, read the articles. I always love the support. I always love the discussion.
Yes.
And it's great that I've got people like you, TJ, so I can have an outlet and people, you know, to reach out to?
It's a topic that, I mean, it's, I saw the masked superstar, Shoemaker. He wrote, you know, he reposted his spot over at Grantland, and it really is. You go back through the days, and you're like, yeah, that's, oh, yeah. Like Tatanka, you're an Indian who does a war dance and then got bought out by the $1 million man. We see nothing wrong with this. No? Okay, fine. Moving on. Moving on.
And I'm just going to keep going back to you bring up how the outrage needs to be behind the fact that behind the scenes, it's like pretty much all white guys. And, you know, and there's, it's like an old boys network.
Yep.
So that needs to change before anything else. Because WWE can always make tweaks to its storyline, and then after a while, just go back to their old ways, which has happened time and time again.
Right.
You need black voices. You need black authority figures behind the scenes.
Yeah, exactly. Ahmed Johnson gets a push and gets injured, and they're like, well, let's go back to Diesel and whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, Mabel becomes king, and they're like, map, you're not going to be Viscera, this, you know, devil worshiper, whatever.
Right.
So, all right, well, thank you again for coming on. A great topic, and it needs to be said more and more instead of just waiting for an aging 80s superstar to come out and say a bunch of racist stuff on a hidden tape. And basically, he got Donald Sterling, right? We finally came up and saw what he really was.
Right, right. That's exactly what happened with him. It's actually not exactly what happened. Well, it's a different industry.
Yes.
But, he's going to go away for a while.
Going to be going away for a while. So we'll end on a prediction. Before or after WrestleMania 33, he'll be back.
After.
Okay. I say before, just because of the Wu-Tang theory. Cream. Somehow we'll make money off of him. His redemption tour will come out. Jesse Jackson will be involved because Jesse and Reverend now, both WWE on camera people already. And I think he'll be back beforehand.
Wow, very bold prediction. And I will say this, though. Guaranteed for WrestleMania 40, provided he's alive and all that stuff, you know, guaranteed for WrestleMania 40.
Okay, yes, because it's a nice round number. Nice round numbers get people to come back. Okay, Big Nasty, thank you again, as always, for coming on. And let's hope we talk next time about simpler things and not racist topics.
I know, man. I am literally sweating. You got me so worked up. I'm literally sweating right now.
All right, there's this week's episode with the aforementioned Big Nasty. As I said at the top of the show, follow him on Twitter at This Is Nasty. He always has his hashtags coming out there. Always nice to get in for his Raw mailbag as well, which kind of made it in there for the Bleacher Report. I know whenever I said how Brock Lesnar is the mayor of Suplex City, why isn't Scott Steiner the founder of Suplex City, seeing that if you go back and rewatch, thanks to the 2002 Royal Rumble main event against Triple H, that's all he did was belly to back, or belly to belly, and whatever suplexes. And at the time, we all thought it was super boring. So thank you, him coming on. Thank you, the listener, for listening again. Went a little longer than last week's episode, but whenever you get into a hot button topic like race, you know, we go a little bit longer than just talking about Mariota or Winston, which also a good topic, but I mean, not as good as what this one is with our guy over at Pod Nasty. So I'll cut it short here on the outro. Thank you for listening. As I said, make sure to go click on the Twitter for myself at TJ Macaroon or Place TV Nation, where you can follow my show, The Extra Point, The Kevin Kelly Show, a whole host of other ones as well. I mean, every day it seems like a new person is tweeting out a new wrestling show or a new show just in general. So a lot of good stuff going on over at our site. But that's it. So until next week, I am TJ Macklin. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.